we're doing a podcast.
Uh-huh. Completely out of the blue.
Well, given that I said probably, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago that we should do a podcast.
Yeah, and you got super excited about it.
I did. I was deeply excited, but then...
And then you never replied.
Yeah.
To the, and I'll tell you why you didn't reply, because you seem to have some kind of hatred for WhatsApp and would much rather use Elon Musk's weapons of mass destruction, such as Signal or, you know, whatever the other one is.
Listen, WhatsApp is a Facebook product, and that just makes me inherently distrust it. So,
well, Peter,
they should have never allowed the acquisition in the first place. But that's,
I've just said your name, by the way. Who are you?
Oh, well, I'm Peter Bryant, your older brother, so I would have hoped that you would have this information already
stored in your
brain.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm only 21, so it's taken some time to, you know, embed in. Are you going to ask me who I am?
I wasn't planning to, but if
well,
you insist.
Well, I'm the younger, better-looking one. Nick. It's true, everyone. It's true. The younger brother, I'm the youngest of three, and they do say it gets geometrically better the more children you have. So by the third one, it's eight times better.
How can
it's doubling?
How can that possibly be true?
Well, it's exemplary in my case. So Facebook, so WhatsApp. You don't like WhatsApp because it's owned by Facebook. And now I use Facebook. I use WhatsApp. I actually regularly send all my information to Vladimir Putin on a monthly basis.
Yes.
And I'm okay with that because if someone's using my data, then they've been using it for a long time, and I don't feel like it's going to make any difference to my life whether someone has my data or they don't. I don't feel like I'm in danger. So what are your qualms with Mark Zuckerberg knowing what you're searching for on the internet?
I think it's less of a practical reason. Like it's not as if I have anything to hide. It might be a bit embarrassing if somebody else were to like look through my internet search history and like find that I'm searching for morbidly disinteresting things. Like, in fact, should we do this exercise right now? I'm going to go onto my Wiki, because I use the Wikipedia app a lot on my phone. So I'm going to look at, does Wikipedia even do search history, or is that
you want me to go onto my Chrome browser search history on my telephone?
Okay, Wikipedia doesn't actually remember what you searched for, which is not very... Oh, no, history. Here we go, history. So this is my Wikipedia history in reverse chronological order. So the most recent thing that I read about on Wikipedia was Noah's Ark.
Why? Now I'm interested in that.
Well, because I was watching... we were watching Evan Almighty, which is a film starring Steve Carell, in which he...
It's called upon,
quite right, as Noah was in the biblical myth.
Yes, and both by Morgan Freeman, actually.
In both cases. So Noah's Ark, I was reading about that. I was very interested to see, actually, that the Wikipedia page for Noah's Ark... or rather, the Wikipedia page for the Genesis flood narrative, which is the story, the proper name, the catchy title for the story of Noah's Ark. The Genesis flood narrative, this is a quote from Wikipedia now. The Genesis flood narrative is a flood myth found in the Tanakh, chapter 6-9 in the book of Genesis. I just find it very interesting that they just outright describe it as a myth. In the first sentence of Wikipedia, like that is gonna annoy some people.
So does Wikipedia have a secular agenda? Although it might depend on
I think Wikipedia has a factual agenda. I don't know.
But... Well, are they the same thing? Wikipedia,
this got deep very quickly.
Wikipedia certainly. I'm looking up the Google definition of myth.
Yeah.
So a myth is a traditional story especially one concerning the early history of a people, or explaining a natural or social phenomenon and typically involving supernatural beings or events. So at no point in that does it actually say that it is false or untrue.
I see.
That is the one of the definitions of myth. It just says a story involving supernatural beings or events. And certainly, you know, in the case, in the argument that, you know, Noah's Ark happened, it was a factual story, then it would obviously be a supernatural event. So I think Wikipedia are, by the dictionary definition, being correct when they describe Noah's Ark as a myth.
Interesting. Definitely. So yeah, Noah's Ark, that was something I read about on Wikipedia recently. How I Met Your Mother,
The TV show,
yeah,
right.
Well, I met your mother when I came out of her womb.
Birth canal.
Yes,
the first slippy slide we ever went on. there's a great I don't know how many if you've watched The Vicar of Dibley recently.
not recently.
They do a Christmas special. And there was one where they asked the residents of Dibley to write a Christmas carol. And obviously, you know, as you know, everyone has
Jacob
terrible
Marley
ideas.
Was dead to begin with, is that what?
everyone has terrible ideas. And the one that Jim Trott, who was played by Trevor Peacock, who's just died, he wrote one which was, it described... sort of from a medical point of view, the actual physical birth of the baby Jesus, and included all sorts of, you know, highbrow medical terms like episiotomy, things like that. And that's the one that was sung in church on in Dibley Church, the Church of St. Barnabas, on Christmas Day. So yeah, the birth canal.
Good.
Yes. So that's how I met your mother.
Indeed. Yeah. But yes, we are, Chloe and I are watching that at the moment. We're halfway through season 8, and it is, we are enjoying it overall.
Good. I've never watched it.
It's very long. It's like, there are a handful of, series of, like TV shows, which go on just a little bit too long. I think the most famous one is probably The Office, the US Office.
Yeah.
Which could happily have ended two seasons before it did. You know, the last couple of seasons were like fine, but they weren't. That as soon as Steve Carell left the cast, it just they lost their direction, I think.
This is turning into a bit of a Steve Carell.
I think he's fab.
But no, I know what you mean. The Big Bang Theory is another great example.
Although I don't think the Big Bang Theory was ever funny.
Do not.
No, I think so. So I did actually used to enjoy watching the Big Bang Theory until one of my friends who didn't like it said, okay, next time you watch an episode of the Big Bang Theory, try this experiment. Try ignoring the laugh tracks, try like filtering out the canned laughter, and you'll realize that none of the things that people are laughing at are actually funny. And I tried it, and it's absolutely true. Like, nothing in the Big Bang Theory is funny.
It may as well just be they shouldn't really call it a sitcom. They should call it a sit.
Yeah.
It's just a show about,
it's a dull drama. That's what it is.
I think there is some merit in the first couple of seasons, and I liked The Big Bang Theory because it was a show about very, very clever people, very successful, intelligent. You know, they were really, really high up in their field, and I relate to that. But also they were all completely socially inept. You know, they couldn't talk to girls. Their sort of social skills were very, very limited, and that's truly what I really related to.
Yeah.
And then it got bad when they all got girlfriends, and it stopped being about It stopped being about science and everything, because there were, you know, there were like proper science jokes and quips and stuff in the Big Bang Theory, like all the way through. And then like the last few episodes and the last couple of series, it's like, it's all just like, Leonard, did you take the trash out last night? No. Oh, okay. Well, how about we have sex? And that's basically.
Is that
the Big Bang
thing?
Theory, like the last couple of series of the Big Bang Theory in a nutshell.
I think I do agree that the turning point for the Big Bang Theory was when Leonard and Penny got together for the first time. And suddenly you stopped being able to relate to Leonard because that it just wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Suddenly Leonard is like this automatically attractive sort of every single woman around him falls for him. Like, he has plenty of love interests,
yeah.
Like in this series, and he just seems to do it sort of effortlessly. But that doesn't really make sense with his character.
It doesn't reflect the people who would have related to him to begin with.
Yeah,
which is annoying.
I was looking at, I went on Wikipedia. Do you have an account on Wikipedia?
I do. I haven't signed into it for a very long. My app is not signed into it.
Okay.
I don't really. Because I think I created it once because I read an article that I was fiercely angry about an error in it. So I created an account so I could correct an error in an article one time.
I think that's what happened. I've corrected not a proper Wikipedia entry, but I've corrected a RuneScape wiki entry because it got the amount of XP for some kind of task wrong. And I thought, do you know what? There's going to be millions of people around the world who are relying on that piece of data to, you know, work out how many hours it's going to take, you know, fishing cod out of a river before they get 99 fishing. So I felt very proud when I corrected that. Gave me a sense of value.
Yeah.
I've probably not contributed anything else to society more so than in that act.
I do like Wikipedia because in a lot of ways it embodies the traditional aim of the internet, which was as a knowledge sharing,
yeah,
collaborative space. You know, the original concept for the internet was like scientists can share data and papers and things, and it would speed up the advances in scientific developments and research and things like that. And now we use it for Facebook.
But now, interestingly, you say originally used for, you know, scientific data bank, but now amongst sort of, you know, academics, it's treated as not a very trustworthy source of information.
Yeah.
by its very nature of being a app, anyone can go on there and edit it.
Mm.
So, you know, as a student, you know, it's always, am I okay to use Wikipedia as a source? And they go, no, you must use Google Scholar, which I think, to be honest, I think is fine because most of the people who write like scholarly articles on Wikipedia have probably skimmed through some very basic, you know, sort of teaching resource. And they've probably missed out a few points. They've probably not quite got the gist of it. So actually, for me, you know, I never use Wikipedia to like find, unless I've like forgotten and like just an equation, like volume of a sphere. Like, who's got time to remember the equation for the volume of a sphere?
Four-thirds pi. And I use it all the time. I've got it. A bookmark for it, actually, the Wikipedia article up here.
To be honest, the four-dimensional one is much more useful than the three-dimensional one. But you know that sort of stuff. But you know, I wouldn't trust Wikipedia to like, you know, tell me how to find the eigenspace of a 3x3 matrix. I certainly wouldn't
in that specific use case either.
No,
certainly not. And I could even repeat that sentence to you if I wanted to, but I don't.
There's no need. Someone's already written it on Wikipedia, so you can find it later.
Yes, we were talking about How I Met Your Mother. What is interesting about How I Met Your Mother is that, you know, I don't know a lot about how the production of television sitcoms and stuff works, but my understanding is that the people who want to make the show have to like appeal to an executive production team and be like, we think we should make this show. can you sign us on for like a season or two seasons or whatever? And then the executive producers go, yeah, fine, two seasons, here's a contract. And then if the seasons that you've signed on for are successful, they might ask you to sign on and do further additional seasons. So you're kind of, in a lot of ways, you're kind of making it up as you're going along. How I Met Your Mother is interesting in that the premise is that it is going to tell a story in a very, very long, roundabout way.
It's a recollection.
It's a recollection, and the premise is that eventually, when the show ends, you are gonna understand something. You are gonna understand this one very specific thing about how the story ends, and to me, that seems like a very big risk from a writing a television show point of view, because like. I think there are 9 seasons overall of How I Met Your Mother. If it had ended after 5 seasons, like, they wouldn't have finished the story.
Yeah.
And that would have sucked. And I'm sure, shows have been cancelled in the past without a full resolution. But like, How I Met Your Mother's entire premise is there are going to be... And it does seem a lot like they planned it very, very carefully around... 9 seasons or whatever, because they reveal information at a pretty steady rate throughout the show. It doesn't seem like they are trying to extend the story as the seasons go on. But yeah, it's just a very, very big risk. Like almost if they knew that they were like, going to get all 9 seasons,
they have to guarantee. We're like we guarantee that we've got 9 seasons, we've got 117 episodes of good quality stuff that's all going to tie together and it's all going to make sense. So that's a pretty big, like, that's a lot to ask out of a 2-hour long film, let alone like 117 episodes of a TV show, which is why I think for TV production companies, shows like It's Always Sunny, they're less risky.
Yeah.
Because every episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, it's not really part of a bigger storyline. There's like little tiny stories like Matt gets fat at some point for no reason or whatever. But at no point would it be weird to just stop It's Always Sunny. Like there's no sort of thing you want to find out at the end.
Yeah.
But I think with like you said, like it all starts off with that initial idea, and I live with a TV studies, whatever you want to call it, theater film, and they've changed the name of it in the last 3 years, and I don't want to be politically incorrect, that like, you know, theater film, TV, yeah, media, that there, I live with one of those students, and so it naturally it gives me the opportunity to exercise my creative mind and come up with ideas for TV shows, and he's actually currently working on a TV show. But I had the idea of it's like a comedy drama about a Scottish chef, and the premise is in the first episode, basically he's like, he doesn't really know that, but he's not actually very good at cooking. Like he's in a restaurant, he works in the kitchen in a restaurant, he's very passionate. And he gets a bit angry sometimes, but he's actually not very knowledgeable about like cooking, and he's always trying to like lead a team, even though he's just like a dishwasher, or whatever. And accidentally, like this in episode one, what would happen is accidentally he poisons the head chef. Like everyone's gone home. And he like makes something for the head chef, and he accidentally poisons him, and no one's around to see it.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah, so he accidentally poisons the head chef, and he's just like, oh, "What do I do now?" And so he like, and so the premise is he then like everyone comes into work the next day, and he's like, "So the head chef has decided to leave, and he's actually put me in charge." And so he like pretends to be the head chef of this restaurant, all because of the premise that he accidentally killed the head chef, and I think. The best thing about this is I think the name of this guy should be Wallace.
Why?
Wallace, Wallace, what? Because it's Scottish. It's like the epitome.
So it's like you just want to annoy as many Scottish people as possible.
No, you can just imagine like Wallace. He's like this just sort of angry, unknowledgeable Scottish guy just in a kitchen being like, I want it to cook that and I want it to be good. And it's just like this angry kind of leadership style.
I take
it
you won't be playing Wallace.
No, I could never.
With a Scotch
I could never.
Accent like that.
I could never. My face is too kind to
play. Have you got a lead actor in mind?
I was thinking...
For Mr. Wallace?
He's just been on Ewan McGregor.
Who is not Scottish?
No, that not Ewan McGregor. I'll get it in the end. He was just on Celebrity Bake Off or Stand Up to Cancer Bake Off. He's Scottish. He's ginger. He's got like that kind of ginger stubble. He's quite hench as well. Or failing that, Matt Lucas I think could pull it off quite well. So if anyone wants to produce that, if anyone thinks that's a good idea. That, you know, give me a call.
this is going out on the internet, so somebody could just steal it, I guess.
But... Someone could steal it, and to be honest, good luck to you because I'm just
it's not a very good idea.
No. I'm the ideas guy. I just want to be proud of it. But also, this would be a record that I'd be the first person to have the idea. So Wallace.
Fascinating.
My idea for a sitcom.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite sitcom? What do you keep coming back to?
What do I keep? So many things. I think.
Because you haven't watched Parks and Rec yet, have you?
No, I've not watched Parks and Rec, but
honestly,
I think my favorite sitcom is probably The IT Crowd.
Really?
Yeah, I love all that. I don't think it gets bad. It's one of those. It just doesn't get bad. It's every single episode is as funny as every other episode, and it's just so. I mean, like you know, you and I like to take the piss out of Matt Berry's character. Oh
yes.
God! I just think it's that
not
perfect,
for you, Jen.
It's not for you, Jen. I just think it's the perfect. Coincidence of I mean that in the physical sense of the word.
Yes.
Of reality and surrealness. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because the absurdity, I think that's a better word for it. If absurdity is, there's got to be the opposite of surdity, hasn't it? It's the perfect. It's a very realistic, boring kind of premise.
Yeah.
Just in an office of IT people, but everything that happens to them is just so surreal. I love how unrealistic it is, and the writing is
great.
So good.
Yeah, I think I love the IT Crowd. I think it has. Aged quite poorly in some of the jokes.
Yes, some of them.
But yeah, I think it's one of those where it was like it probably ended prematurely as well, because like I seem to remember they did three seasons, and then there was that one episode that was
the final one,
which felt a little bit like cobbled together because they were like, oh. The show's been cancelled. We have to make a final episode. I don't know that. I think it just feels like they wanted to make a season four or whatever, like a last season, and then they were told, "Oh no, we're not funding another season. You can have an episode if you want."
Yeah, the last episode has a lot of it's like a lot of ideas that would have made good individual episodes if they'd had a bit more time to get fleshed out. Because there's a lot going on in that last episode.
Yeah.
But,
but yeah, I think there are some great characters in the IT
but it has one of my favourite lines in it though. It's like, so what do women and small people have in common? What do they both like? Not being attacked is one of my favourite lines.
It's painfully true as well. The reason I bring up Parks and Rec is because I think I'm right in saying that I've watched Parks and Rec through 5 times now.
Goodness me.
And that's a serious undertaking because, again, there's maybe 8 or 9 seasons or something in that ballpark. Nearly 10 seasons.
Ballpark.
It's very good. And that one, Parks and Rec is just such a masterclass in character writing and character acting. Like you want to be most of the people on that show.
Isn't it partially improvised as well? Or am I thinking of a different show?
I think maybe. Maybe. I don't think it is. I think there are a few moments that were improvised. Like there's a famous scene where one of the characters, so one of the characters is played by, what's his name? The guy who's in like Jurassic Park and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, Jack Black.
No.
I've not seen either of those.
Oh, is it Chris something? I can't remember. Why can't I remember his name? This is terrible.
Chris Evans. Chris Peckham. No, Chris Parker.
Andy Dwyer. Chris Pratt. That's who I'm thinking of.
Oh, right.
So there's a character played by Chris Pratt who is kind of a caricature of a silly but lovable and loyal fella.
Reminds me of someone.
Myself. Yeah. So, yeah, kind of like an incredibly loyal dog who's just very clumsy and stuff. Honestly, that's his character, and like he's so well meaning. And then another character is like a workaholic, Leslie Knope, and in one episode, Leslie is feeling sick. And there's this improvised line that Chris Pratt's character says where he's like sat at his desk and Leslie's like running around and he's just sat there and goes, Leslie, I googled your symptoms and it says you may have network connectivity problems. And it's like one of the best lines from the whole show, and
that's
it was
one of the best lines of comedy I've ever heard.
It was later revealed that it was improvised by Chris Pratt, and it's just so good.
That's transcendent comedy.
It is transcendent.
That's absolutely transcendent. Now, am I right? Because I remember being at yours, and you have enforced Parks and Rec on me, I think a couple of times because. There's a particular character that you seem to, I think the word was identify with.
Idolize.
Worship.
Yeah, I don't identify with him because we are not similar. We're talking about Ron Ulysses Swanson. Yeah, that's his name. In fact, just give me 1 second because
yes,
I need to. Let's go through this.
Yes, I saw it behind you, so. Now I don't know anything about Parks and Rec, but Peter's very passionate about it, and he's got it's an infographic, I think is the best way to describe it. So yeah, go ahead.
I'm back.
Yeah.
All right. So my partner knows full well that I am a Ron Swanson fan, and so for Christmas or about Christmas, she bought me a printout of the Swanson Pyramid of Greatness. Which is this chart that is used in the show, where Ron Swanson is educating a group of young boys in how to become
like him.
Swanson-like men. Yes, and it's a pyramid, and you kind of built. It's got some foundational things, and then as you work up the pyramid, it gets more and more important, but few and few, because that's the shape of. I'm currently explaining the shape of a triangle.
No,
to
please go ahead.
For example, some examples: capitalism, God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor. What else have we got? Poise, sting like a bee, do not float like a butterfly. That is ridiculous.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine though?
Body grooming, only women shave beneath the neck.
Beneath the neck.
Yeah. Think about that.
I'm thinking about it.
That's kind of your idea of the bottom level. Next level up, cabins, a place to rest that is made of logs.
Factual.
Masonry, building walls makes you strong, defending them makes you stronger.
I don't know enough about masonry to have a reaction to that, but I think that's a good thing, probably.
Property rights, they exist, do not let them be taken away from you. You are your biggest ally. Perspiration, only sweat during physical activity or lovemaking, no emotional sweating.
Some people would describe lovemaking as a physical activity. Apparently, half an hour of as we're calling it, lovemaking a day is equivalent to a pretty intense session at the gym.
Yeah, it is.
That's factual. That's science. That is.
Yeah. Torso should be thick and impenetrable. Old wooden sailing ships, they're beautiful.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
B.O., cultivating a manly musk puts your opponents on notice. And then there's this entire row in the middle of the Swanson Pyramid of Greatness, which is just... These are all of the items on this row. Cow protein, pig protein, chicken protein, romantic love, deer protein, and fish for sport only.
Fish for sport only.
And then atop the Swanson Pyramid of Greatness is honour. If you need it defined, you don't have it.
I think I would agree with that. For honour is something that one learns for oneself. One's honour is one's own, and one does not go after one's other one's honour.
Absolutely.
Now, it's interesting, because you mentioned in the middle there all the various types of protein. Because we are on the cusp, are we not, of being able to sustainably and cheaply cultivate, grow, create, if you will, lab grown meat.
Yeah,
which is exciting from my point of view.
Why is that exciting from your point of view?
Because it means I don't have to feel bad about being a carnivore.
Yes.
I live in a house full of vegans.
I too am very excited about this and would be like fully on board. I did, you might remember, like 18 months ago, I did a vegan month.
Was it not? It wasn't January though, was it?
No, it wasn't veganuary. No. I just decided one month I am going to be a vegan for a month. That was my goal. And I hated it so much, honestly. I'm not sure whether it's just because I didn't do it right or what, but like, I mean, I'm sure I didn't do it right because I felt ill and
it's like going cold turkey, isn't it?
Well, no, but the vegans would say that it shouldn't be because you replace the missing nutrients with, or rather you replace the sources of protein and things with alternative sources. So like you eat lots of pulses and beans and things like that. I think I just didn't do it properly. But yeah, I just felt very, very tired and hungry all the time. And I did seriously start to crave meat towards the end, to the point where I didn't actually make it a month because I just had to eat a pizza. I just got so, you know, ravenously desperate for a pizza.
I don't think I could ever even entertain the notion of doing a vegan month. To be honest, I don't think I could last a week. I think I have eaten meat every single day of my life since I was about 4 years old. Mm. I genuinely think that's true.
I think you might be right about that. And I think that is interesting because I think a lot of people do eat meat, you know, at least 2 or 3 times a week, let's say. It's probably the average in the Western world, at least. And that average, I imagine, has seriously increased in the last 50 years. You know, you talk to people who grew up in the 40s and 50s, and you know, they've told me that meat on Sunday, or, you know, your Sunday roast was a treat. Like, you would eat chicken once a week.
Post-war, you know, rationing's still kind of going on. And also the whole point about food production is that it's an industry, it's an industrial conveyor belt thing.
Yeah.
And that just, you know, in the 50s, you know, people thought meat, they didn't associate farming with some kind of industry. Like, I think that the idea of having a local butcher, you know exactly that this piece of steak on my plate came from a farm two miles away.
You can name the farm. You can probably drive there.
That used to be really common, but that just doesn't happen now. And so meat is so much more available. And also, you can have meat for like every single meal in you know, and different types of meat. So like, you for breakfast, imagine the people who make a cooked breakfast. I mean, I dream. Imagine that the people who make a cooked breakfast every morning, what you got sausage in there, you got bacon in there, black pudding as well. And then for lunch, people are like, I'll have a ham sandwich or whatever. And then dinner, obviously, like whole roast chicken each is usually my go-to takeaway order. I recently discovered that Nando's have started delivering on Deliveroo now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can get a decent, nutritious meal from delivered to my doorstep. This isn't sponsored, by the way. Maybe it should be. We're talking about, you know. But yeah,
Deliveroo,
I can get it. And I tell you what,
promised land. I've been listening to the Prince of Egypt soundtrack, and there's a song in there called Deliver Us.
Deliveroo have got to get on that.
Yeah.
They've got to get on that. Just Eat have got, what is it? Is it Snoop Dogg?
Yeah, that's astonishing. Dogg.
I gotta eat summit, so I'm gonna go on my phone and I'm gonna order it, and then it's gonna come to the door and I'm gonna eat it. Duh, Just Eat. That's, yeah, and something to that effect.
It's very interesting that you chose to actually do the rap there.
No, it's not the rap. That's my rap, because you have to find your own honor. I'm not trying to steal Snoop Dogg's honor. My honor comes from my own rapping.
Mm-hmm. If you need it defined, you don't have it.
If you need it defined, you don't have it. So no, yeah, I just love chicken.
Yeah, it's a top bird.
Mum, she is. Mum calls me a chicken child.
Yes.
Because I think my entire diet was like mashed up chicken and avocado, and I still depend on those chemically to a certain extent.
I'm very pleased, because hopefully May the 17th is going to be the day on which I'm allowed to go out to a restaurant. And my birthday, as you know, is May the 20th.
Yes, I did.
So I booked my birthday week off. My birthday was on a Thursday this week, I think. This year, even. And I've booked that week off work, and I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to go out for a steak as my birthday meal.
Do you know where I'm going? As soon as I can go to a restaurant, you know where I'm going?
Nando's.
Wetherspoons.
Oh,
let
yes.
Let me tell you. Let me
More
tell you
money
something.
To Tim Martin.
Let me no right. Here's where I fall. I know there's a bit of a debate about Wetherspoons at the moment, because, you know, people say that the staff don't, you know, the pay's not very good. They don't, you know, not treated very well, all this sort of stuff. And a lot of them weren't, you know, furloughed or whatever, of a lockdown or whatever. And that's terrible. That's really, really bad business. And then so people like boycott Wetherspoons when it's open again. And I, to be honest, I fall on the side of no, don't do that, because the people who work there are going to depend on you spending money there. So don't, you know, when you think about giving money to, what is it, Tim Marshall, is that his name?
Yes.
You are giving money to Tim Marshall. And that's
Martin.
Yeah. That's unavoidable. But you're also giving money to, you know, students around who just need to work somewhere. And that's what I'm thinking about. Because let me tell you, that mixed grill is irresistible.
You're not wrong, to be fair. It's Tim, like, Wetherspoon's food is highly underrated, I think. And it's not to say that it's like good.
No.
But it's fine.
You've had a lot of experience, you know, you've had girlfriends who have been good at cooking, you've lived in a real house where you've got your own kitchen, you've been able to experiment with recipes and, you know, make real food. I don't do that.
Yeah, so Wetherspoons is a treat.
Wetherspoons is like gourmet, proper restaurant like style. Like, I'll get dressed up to go to Wetherspoons.
I think you need to eat out more.
I've been on a couple of dates, first dates, to Wetherspoons.
Did they result in second dates?
No, they didn't.
Didn't they? Well, maybe. What's the common denominator there? Other than you, obviously.
Other than me, and to be honest, it's been a very long time now. I'm starting to think that is the real common denominator here. But you know, no. I mean, I had a great time.
Next time, try not going to Wetherspoons.
Bella Italia
is equally quite cheap. Yes. I would say. Pizza Express is a level up, definitely.
But I can't eat most of it. Because of the cheese.
I think if you want a really, really good date spot in York, the Cut and Craft Steakhouse is up there.
Is that the one? Where is that?
It's in York. Yes.
I've definitely
it's in the town centre. But yeah, honestly, like, really, really decent steaks. I've been there twice and I've had the same order both times. I've had a steak with peppercorn sauce and some chips and a side of mac and cheese, which I order to share, but no, I just eat it all.
There is no such thing as sharing when it comes to food.
I strongly agree with you there.
And the thing about, this is my only fear about starting a family. I don't care about all the horrors of the child. Not that I'd be doing the childbirth, but you know, the bringing up and the nappies and the drama in the schools. No, I feel like I'm prepared for all of that. What I'm not prepared for is having to say to my wife, I'm not prepared for saying, I'm getting this, and what are you getting? I don't think I'm emotionally prepared to have that conversation with someone I love that much. I think it's a separation. You're putting up the idea of not sharing puts that barrier, because it's like, oh, can I try a bit? No. If you wanted it, you should have ordered it.
I strongly agree with you. And to be fair, I think there are probably many other people who are in that camp. Like Chloe is not a food sharer at all, which is great. I do think there are always inevitable silly compromises that you feel rock you to the very core of your principles. So as an example, as a northerner, I am very, very attached to the process of making a cup of tea.
Yes.
And as everybody knows, the only correct way to make a cup of tea is as follows. Step one, boil the kettle. Step two, put a tea bag
in. Wait. You didn't put any water in the kettle.
Listen, honestly, this is very important to me.
That's the most important step. You can't have a cup of tea without water.
Put water in the kettle, step one. Step two, turn the kettle on so that it boils. While the kettle is boiling, put a tea bag in a nice mug. Your favourite mug, if you're feeling fancy. Once the kettle has boiled, pour hot water, boiling water, onto tea bag and allow to steep for desired time, but no fewer than 60 seconds, I would say.
Here's the important bit. Okay.
Don't interrupt me, because this is the tricky part here that people really seem to struggle with. Okay. Steeped. We have steeped the tea bag in the hot water for a desired period of time, 1 to 5 minutes, depending on preference.
Goodness.
Here's the next step. Remove the tea bag from the cup. Give it a little squeeze with your spoon if you're one of those people. I'm not too bothered if you want to squeeze it out with your spoon. Get rid of the tea bag. You're done with it. Then, and only then, may you add additional extras such as milk and or sugar. This practice of the milk touching the tea bag is disgusting and it has to stop.
What's scientifically wrong with...
Well, look, what you end up doing is disrupting the infusion process more than anything else, which, you know, you end up... Instead of infusing tea into water, you infuse tea into milky water, and milky water is a totally different substance. So you're gonna cause issues there. That's the first thing. Second thing is, it looks awful. I don't want to drink a cup of tea when I know that at some point it has looked like somebody's been sick on a tea bag.
And it does. It does look like that when
it does when you got a milky, watery, brownish substance with something floating in it.
Because you got to remember that the tea bag is a semi-permeable membrane.
Yes,
because it lets things out. But if something lets things out, by Newton's second law, it's got to let them in as well.
Yeah.
So, some of that milk is actually going to go in
into the tea bag, and you're going to remove the tea bag. You're going to put it. We have a little dish next to the kettle where we put our, because we don't want to put hot tea bags in the bin. So we have a little
fire.
Because, well, not necessarily fire. It just makes the bin smell bad. But we put the tea bag in the little dish next to the thing, and that can look gross if there's been a bit of milk. Look, the milk should never touch the tea bag. It's very important. And if you're listening to this and you're one of those people, I implore you, please, just stop doing it. Just don't do it. It's not worth it. It doesn't take it. The time that it takes does not change a millisecond. You're just reordering a couple of the steps, and you will have a much more pleasant tea making and tea drinking experience, in my experience.
Or do what I do and just have a hot chocolate instead.
Or if you don't drink tea.
Because I'm not a slave to the caffeine masters.
No, I find it cute that you think that there's like a person who is in charge of all the caffeine. And he's like,
well, it's probably Jeff Bezos. If it's
him or Zuckerberg. Yeah,
him or Zuckerberg. Got it, probably not Tim Martin though.
No, he's not smart enough to do that.
Have you set up a multi-million-pound business?
He runs a chain of pubs. Let's not.
He runs a multi-million-pound chain of pubs. They're excellent. I love that.
He does do good pubs.
Well
done, Tim.
They do good microwaving in.
They are good at microwaving things. Yeah.
My favorite thing to say at Wetherspoons when the hot chocolate fudge cake comes out is just going, cut them with 10 more seconds in the microwave.
How witty. Mate, we've been recording for like nearly 50 minutes.
I was going to say 15 minutes, bloody hell, that was slow.
Just conversations with me.
No.
So I think we'll wrap it as episode one. But if you've enjoyed episode one, what do people say on podcasts?
I think they say...
Do they say like, and you can't like a podcast. You can subscribe to a podcast though. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, you can go and leave us a 5-star rating. That would be lovely. If you're not on Apple Podcasts, then you're clearly an Android peasant. So
and if
you
think,
can't do anything.
And if you're thinking about leaving anything other than a 5-star rating, then don't bother.
It's be
obviously,
nice.
It's obviously you've obviously not enjoyed it enough for it to be worth your time to leave us a review.
Yeah.
So
I'd go with that.
5-star reviews. Good vibes only, please.
Think of something good to do for somebody else and go and do that instead.
Yeah, you idiot.
Spread some love. All right. It's the end.
It's the end.
Bye.
Bye-bye.